Hello everyone, I am your Heard and Hearing host, Nicole, and you're listening to Season 5 of the All Access Pass, the summer edition on CITR 101.9. Through Skype, I am joined by my Accessibility Collective teammate, Phoebe.
Hi!
Monica.
Hi.
And Jesse will join us later, and Gara, unfortunately, was unable to make it today, but you have the rest of us. And today is going to be an interesting one. If you might have noticed on social media or seen in the news, you have heard a lot about human rights movements for the Black Lives Matter. But on today's show, we want to take you with us on a step back at things and talk about disability rights and social change. We have a jam-packed day for you on topics like accessibility during COVID times, as well as a look back on the history of disability rights. Like, how did it come to be in Canada? But first, we want to start with a very special guest. Hi, Alex.
Hello.
So you were the person behind the curtains when we were doing the All Access Pass the past couple of seasons. You worked very closely with the Accessibility Collective. Our listeners don't know, but you were manning the switchboard for us. You were helping organize our training sessions on like interviewing skills, and you were showing us how to edit post-shows on CITR, and you were even taking our meeting minutes. You've been amazing. We wanted to kind of have a little chat. There's some things that are changing. Before we start, what have you learned from working with others with disabilities and a person yourself who doesn't have a disability? You haven't worked with people like us before?
As you said, I did some of the behind the scenes stuff for All Access Pass, like helping with the boards and other things, but I mean, I'm definitely, I don't know how much I did. I don't think I did that much, but
thank you for
some of the time stuff. I have left my position as spoken word coordinator, so I'm sad to go in some ways, and I have learned a lot working with all the collectives at the station. One of my favorite collectives has always been the Accessibility Collective, DP, since I've been the first year I worked at the station, there was a different coordinator, but DP's been just a really exceptional coordinator, so it's been really great working with her. Because there are more, because we have to adapt to people's different abilities, it's always been a learning experience, because as you all well know, there's such a diversity of people with physical and cognitive disabilities who have been part of the collective on and off, and so, you know, people have different needs and those come up and it's like, oh, how do we adjust, right? How do we, make the radio sound the way we're taught to make it sound while also accommodating, maybe someone who, like, we have one of the they spoke, like, they would point out a letter and they had a, like, someone read that letter or that word for them, but it just took a longer time, so it's like, you know, we decided to cut in our editing some of the silences that the person had between each word while still maintaining some of the silence so as to accurately represent give a sense of the fact that when they are expressing themselves with words, it's going to be a little slower. So, I mean, there's just a lot of situations like that where something comes up either in the moment or, you know, in advance, you know about it in advance, and you just have to figure out how to adapt. And I think that's actually really fun and like, interesting. And I don't know, it's, like, challenging, right? It's, like, it's kind of fun to be challenged and to have to figure things out and be inclusive and, like, use just people who have different experiences and can participate in different ways. I don't know, it's like, yeah, it's been really interesting and fun and like, yeah, just lots of great questions of like, you know, what is good radio? Like, I feel like this collective has really like challenges traditional ideas of like just how radio is supposed to be delivered. Yeah, it's been really great and cool, and I've been lucky to be part of it.
So you've been involved with CICR in a lot of aspects, from helping us run the show, being the spoken word coordinator, and also hosting the podcast club. What's been your favorite memory out of everything you've worked on at CICR?
That's really hard. of course, because there are, as you said, a lot of things I've done, and they've all been valuable in their own ways. My favorite thing, Yeah, I mean, I know, I like when I'm able to help people make radio or podcasts, like tell audio stories, either through working with someone one-on-one and having them talk out their ideas and giving them feedback, or helping them with production, recording, editing. I really like seeing people get inspired and pursuing creative projects. I find that that's really, really gratifying. A lot of my job initially involved working closely with the news collective, so I did have kind of a special bond with them because I both oversaw the news collective and directly ran it for a number of years. So I also really liked that, like going out into the community and interviewing local activists and politicians and really getting kind of my hands dirty with like local democracy. I'm really into democracy or especially like local democracy, local community building. This is, you know, so much of what CICR does, build community, build connections, give people a place to hang out and some like fun stuff to do. So yeah, but it's hard to say a one thing that is was my favorite part of my job. There were many things.
So Jesse couldn't be here today, but she wanted to mention that it was a really great feeling when she came to the studio, that she felt really accepted, and that she could walk in and learn brand new skills that, like you said, it's a new environment, and you have to make a lot of adaptations, but, you know, I think as a person with a disability and working with someone who doesn't, it's also very two-way. So learning new skills, like interviewing, I think editing as well, we did that with you. So she wanted to thank that and said that she was so excited to make it today. But she had a question. It was a little similar, but what has been really rewarding with working at CICR? Really rewarding.
Good question. That's really nice of Jesse to say. Really enjoy her and I met a couple times to talk about, you know, her ideas, and I did some interview training with her, and it was really great to see her. She was really nervous about getting on the radio, but when she did a great job, and you know, that's something that's really rewarding, as I was saying, you know, seeing people, you know, try their hand at something that maybe they've never done before, and to get creative with it. Getting to work with her was rewarding, you know, for example. I think it's a two-way street. It's good, I hope, for people to learn new skills and, like from me, from my training, from my feedback and stuff, and then apply those skills to their work. But also it's like, you know, very rewarding for me to see people improve and like go out and work on stuff they care about. And also the community of it, like, you know, people become friends through volunteer work at CSR, and, you know, you get to know people, and it is a real community, and it feels like a safe space, and, like, it's, like, it works that way for me. Like, I like going into the station and feeling like people care about me, and, like, I have a place I can be. So, I don't know, I think overall the job is just quite rewarding. Any of the jobs at CHR, really, just because it's such a community-minded organization, and really what it comes down to is, like, are you making people feel welcome? Are you creating, like, a fun, safe space? And just, like, listening to people, you know? Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, it's all, like, the what you brought up of, you know, me not having a disability and working with people with disabilities. I mean, I think that I'm sure I have a lot of, like, shortcomings when it comes to not having certain lived experiences, but I definitely hope that I, like, listened and tried my hardest, but again, it's hard, like Gigi and I have talked about many times, because people have such a range of different disabilities, it's really, you know, you're always kind of learning and feeling out each individual person. So, I don't know, I hope I did an okay job, and I'm sure there are many things I could have improved at, but yeah, that's definitely an interesting dynamic, I guess.
I know you are definitely very accommodating and very open. I don't mean to make ever feel that you are not unapproachable or in any way calling short of supporting us.
I agree with Nicole, and thanks for the lovely comments earlier. It was really, really wonderful to work with you as well, and I was curious that friendship, because, you know, not only were we working together, but we formed a friendship, and so I was definitely curious that, and look forward to continuing that, even though it's not going to be up to here. That's okay. But my question for you is, in terms of accessibility and disability, what is something you have learned from the Accessibility Collective and will take with you your next job?
That's a great question, DP. Something I've learned from the Accessibility Collective that I'll take with me to my next job. Well, so my next job, the job I have now, just for listeners who might not know, I'm still working in audio and basically working for a media company called Cited Media Productions, and they make podcasts, so it's not a totally dissimilar job. However, there's most of my job at CHR involves, like, teaching skills, and in this job I'm more doing the work of making audio and not really teaching. So what will I take with me? I mean, it's tough. I'm sure there are, like, lots of little lessons that have shaped the way I work with groups and the way I approach making radio and podcasts and dealing with, you know, the tech issues that come up, which we've all faced, right? I think, you know, I hope I've learned to be, like, patient and problem solve, you know, not get too worked up. I certainly know when I first began at CHR, I would get very scared, and I think I still do, but, you know, hopefully I've gotten a little better at, like, if something goes wrong, just being like, okay, we gotta figure it out, instead of, you know, freaking out. But, yeah, from the Accessibility Collective, I mean, I think that some of what I did when working with the Accessibility Collective was conflict resolution. Like, DP and I had to do some of that with some collective members over the years. So I think there was good practice in folks who have different needs cognitively and, you know, maybe get triggered in certain circumstances. It's like, you know, you can't understand every person's individual experience. You're not in their head. You don't have their, you're just kind of experiencing it. But, you know, you try to be patient and compassionate. And I think really realize it's not about you. You know, I think that's something DP and I have to do a lot is like, maybe someone is saying something hurtful, but it's, you know, they're going through something and it's really not about you. I definitely think that working with the accessibility collective in certain moments did remind me of that, and that's a really good lesson, you know, for everyone, I think. So, yeah.
Okay, and our last question is, can you tell our listeners a little more about what you'll be working on next or what kind of projects you're going to be involved with in the future?
Sure, yeah. As I mentioned, yeah, I'm working for a company called Sighted Media Productions now, and so they have a couple podcasts that they make. Right now, basically I'm doing a bunch of contract work, so I'll sign a contract to, for example, right now I'm working on an audio documentary that I'm making. So, you know, I get paid to make that. And then I have other contracts for different work. So it's like a lot of little projects. So, as I mentioned, right now I'm working on an audio documentary for the podcast Crashdown. Crashdown is a podcast about the war on drugs and drug policy as told by drug user advocates and scientists and researchers and journalists. So it's a very cool, very innovative podcast. And it follows a lot of the same kind of goals that CITR has, kind of our CITR's mandate of, you know, telling stories about marginalized voices and uplifting people who otherwise don't get heard on mainstream media. So with Crashdown, they have a board of people who are drug user advocates, but who kind of guide the content of the show. So they'll say like, oh, we want to hear an episode about, you know, whatever. Right now I'm working on an episode about OxyContin and there was like a overprescribing of opioid pills. I'm sure Nicole knows about this as a nurse, but like, there's an overprescribing narrative around opioid pills like OxyContin. And so I'm looking at its connection with the overdose crisis. So it's really, really research intensive and story intensive, like figuring out how to structure a story in an engaging narrative way. And it's like really challenging and hopefully I'm screwed up, but that's what I'm working on right now, is just one doc. But then I'm also going to be working on launching a new podcast for a local media organization. So I've been working with the one of the co-owners of Sighted Media Productions on launching a new podcast. So I'm doing a few little projects, but so you'll see me more as a producer on Crackdown podcast, and I'll be producing hopefully this new podcast we're launching for a local media organization. I don't know if I can really say much more than that on the radio, so I'm just like leaving out details, but yeah, so I'm making more radio and podcasts.
That's amazing. Yeah, no, Alex, I think I'm so excited for you, and I think I'm really glad that you are the person to kind of help people tell their story, especially during very important issues such as the opioid crisis. And I don't really know a lot, but I do know that the selection of opioids are a very tricky thing sometimes, and then getting off of them is very tricky too. But, you know, seeing you work with us and your insight and your drive and how much you have really good work ethics and respect for people of all different types. I think all of us are going to definitely miss you. We definitely want to thank you for helping us get to where we are as well. You know, it's definitely scary for us walking into the studio and not knowing what radio and live broadcasting is like. And so we're excited for you. We want to wish you the best, and I hope to see you again. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. And I'll just add that my new job is still based out of UBC, so I will still be on campus. I've actually been at CHR a couple times last week because I was on campus. So I will still drop by and see everyone. But thank you very much for having me on the show today.
So on that too, we're going to take a little music break. We have a local performer we'd like to share with you. And this song is performed by a Richard Kwan with Dan Burns and Colin Doon, and the song is called Sweet Home Chicago.
Thank you.
To the All Access Pass show on the CSCR 101.9 FM. The song we just heard was called Sweet Home Chicago, performed by Richard Kwan with Jim Burns and Colin James. So, for those of you who don't know Richard Kwan, he's a local here in the Lower Mainland. He was diagnosed with Duchenne muscular dystrophy, which is a progressive neuromuscular disorder without a known cure, whereby the muscles weaken until they eventually are no longer to function. So life wasn't easy for Richard, but he has had quite a journey. Growing up, Richard's physical disabilities were misunderstood by his teachers, including his principals and his peers, which created a lot of emotional stress and really challenged his self-confidence. After seeking counseling as a teen, Richard was able to come to terms with his diagnosis. However, despite all the rehab sports and adjusted activities, his Duchenne muscular dystrophy continues to take hold of his life, where he wanted to eventually skip school, he went to Don Oliver, and stay home and just play video games. And that was what he could only do at the time, with his condition progressively getting worse, and left his muscles unable to stay strong. Until that age, he discovered a newfound, and quite justly so, as we just heard, a profound love for music through Guitar Hero. Richard made music a real thing in his life and decided to share his passion, as we have just heard. He has his own adapted electric guitar, if you would like to check it out online, and he is the youngest member of the Vancouver Adapted Music Society, who's only a teenager at this time. So most without Duchenne muscular dystrophy have a life expectancy of 26. Those who live to 30, into their 30s and 40s. Today, Richard has his own band, and it's called the Richard Kwan and Progressive Blues Experience. And he is 24 years old. Alright, so DB here has a report for you listeners who may be experiencing accessibility issues with Zoom and Google Meet and Microsoft Teams and Skype and so forth that are now often household names for online communication apps. Yuki, take it away.
Thanks, Nicole. Hello, everyone. Hope you're doing well. Since we are all pretty much staying home due to the pandemic, it is advised by the health officials to stay connected with family, friends, we're calling our clients to keep doing normal things as possible. And most people are taking advantage of this. So I looked up the key communication apps that are really popular right now, and that is Zoom and Google Meet, formerly known as Google Hangouts. But now, how accessible are they? Well, according to an article I found, Android Central, it looked at the pros and cons from both programs, and the title was Google Meet versus Zoom. Which conferencing tool is better for you? It is pointed out that Google Meet comes free with your Gmail for limited video conferencing or had free access for meeting up to 60 minutes long. This program is pretty basic, but has all the collaboration tools you'll need to conduct your meetings. However, Zoom is the best program for connecting to conferencing equipment such as telecom and webcam to allow several people to join in from a single place and device. It noted that the program is more expensive, however, than Google. So, but because of all the calling fees, so to explain further, here are the cons for both Google Meet and Zoom. So we'll start with Google Meet. It does have messy dashboards compared to Zoom. It can hold viewer participants. It is clunky and unreliable for Mac users. Zoom, Holland access copy extra, and must disable pop-up blockers to use. So, it depends on what you're willing to use, or what you're willing to pay less. When it comes to accessibility, though, according to the knowledge page in Indiana University's website, they looked at Zoom and mentioned closed captioning can be enabled by the host for meetings or a third-party app. There are keyboard shortcuts that are also listed in Zoom client under settings. And if you go to accessibility, so all that information will be there. On the other hand, when using Google Meet, you can click on the help section, and there are some accessibility features that which are the following, like slides and display captions of the person speaking, so that participants who are deaf or hard of hearing can follow what's said in video meetings. But if you play the recording, if you record a video meeting, the captions are not recorded and don't appear when you play the recording. So that's that part. But there are also screen readers and magnifiers for folks who are blind and or low vision. So there is a built-in screen reader, a full page, high contrast color, and can be installed by using accessibility extensions. The screen as well as Google Chrome. So I guess you can use whatever you want and feel right for you, but you know that there's going to be some glitches, or it won't be that 100% communicating device that you want, unfortunately. The accessibility testers actually have been trying using different programs as well, like Zoom, Google, and today we're actually using Skype to bring this episode of All Access Pass to you. We're also testing and seeing what works best for us. We all have disabilities. So that is all I have for you. But Nicole, Monica, do you guys have anything to add? How has this experience been for you two? Which one do you guys like so far?
That's an interesting question. I have been having a hard time kind of getting like the sound clarity comes across through multiple persons in a call. And I've had to kind of like advocate for people to kind of just be like, can you speak clear, or like can you maybe slow down, or like have the video on. I know a lot of people don't feel comfortable with that because they're at home and they just want to, comfortable and not watched, I guess. So a lot of that makes you, it's a lot of kind of just turning that down and just saying, I just need this if you're okay with that. And just kind of accepting that, we all have different disabilities and different comfort levels, and people who don't have disabilities have different comfort levels too. So I think that's been, my experience is kind of being patient, but also kind of just stay open-minded. Just like Alex was mentioning, we try to adapt in different ways that we can.
Yeah,
But I've been learning about you guys as well. Like, I mean, DP, you had, like, the keyboard at home, and you said that was better for you sometimes. So, it's been really interesting with COVID times.
Yeah, it's hard to say which one I really like, but I think I'm really leaning into more of Zoom. But yeah, I, like everybody else, it's too expensive. I don't even pay so much money just to have a connectability feature, you know? And I don't understand the whole purpose, because accessibility can be free for everyone. So I don't really like that part. And but yesterday this past Friday I was in a workshop, and it had clear voice. There was 90 people on there. Not that I can see all of them, but they were all there, and it was clear and everything. So somebody was doing the transcribe or the closed captioning. So I mean, if you can make it work, great. But just know that if you can't, these are the things that you will account for. But accessibility isn't always about perfect, right? There's always going to be barriers or something, but you just work around it. If you can, or find other ways. So I think that's all I can really say. But Monica, do you want to add anything else?
For me personally, I feel like Zoom and Google Meet is actually the format is kind of pretty similar, and the sound quality on my end at least is also pretty similar. But I think I do prefer Google Meet because it does have the closed captioning, and I think that would be pretty helpful.
Yeah, I agree with that about Google Meet. It's kind of nice.
Yeah.
Just kind of turning on right now.
So I'll let you take it away, Monica, with your report on the similarities between accessibility and COVID. So take it away.
Thank you, Cece. So with the COVID-19 pandemic, there's been a lot of huge changes to our everyday lives. With these changes, there have been some that have a lot in common with accessibility. One of the changes that have happened is that many of us are now having to work from home. So according to a BBC article written by Matthew Keegan, his quote is that options that have now been rapidly adapted by most workplaces, like remote working, has been a necessary and requested accommodation for people with disabilities for years. Yet prior to the pandemic, these workplace accommodations were not always met. According to a 2017 survey by Statistics Canada, the most commonly required workplace accommodations are 27% for flexible work arrangements, 15% workstation modifications, and 6% other human and technical support. However, these results also revealed that only 59% of employees who required workplace accommodations had all of their needs met, and that only 45% of employees who needed a computer or tablet with specialized software received this accommodation. Now that workplaces have been forced to shift the majority of their activity to a remote format, you can see that companies and businesses do have the resources and capabilities to provide accommodations that will make the workplace more accessible to workers who have disabilities. Working remotely has also been a big change for students and educators as well, who are trying to navigate remote learning and redefining traditional pedagogical strategies. The transition to online learning, of course, was challenging for all parties involved in the sudden switch, but just like how remote working became possible and a requirement, having an entirely online learning experience has provided some solutions to making classes and learning more accessible to students who may find attending classes in person more challenging. For example, some students who may have mobility requirements that make accessing certain classrooms challenging can now attend these classes anywhere with an internet connection and can more readily access all aspects of the online classroom environment. And for me personally and a couple of my friends, I have dropped a course in the past when there were so many people registered in that section of the course that the entire lecture hall was just jam-packed with people and very crowded, which can be distracting or even overwhelming. Now that classes are all online, students who may feel the same way as me about large classes can create a space where we can solely focus on listening to the lecture with less of the distractions from a traditional lecture environment. With most lectures being recorded, some courses are now also providing these recorded lectures with captions. Students may also be able to use some transcription services like Otter.ai on recorded lectures without captions, which can be helpful for those who are hard of hearing. The added options to revisit lectures and other course material is also helpful for many students as well. And finally, because of the added difficulties of trying to maintain accessible spaces and resources during COVID, I'd just like to mention a couple of COVID-related resources that have been made specifically for people with diverse abilities. The International Disability Alliance has launched an accessibility campaign to make public health information surrounding COVID-19 to be fully accessible. And there's also a great list of useful COVID-19 resources for persons with disabilities written by Madeline Barber on the Rick Hansen website. Hopefully, while Canada moves into further phases of the reopening plan and things are slowly getting back to what it used to be, we can take what we've learned through adapting to a socially distanced environment and work together to create more accessible environments moving forward while we establish our new, quote-unquote, new normal. The unprecedented situation of COVID-19 may be able to act as a catalyst for further action taken to increase digital accessibility and accessibility standards for people with diverse abilities.
Thank you, Amartha. Wow, that was really well covered. Thank you for sharing that resource. I agree. There's so many changes that have happened, and the similarities are really important to note. Dee, did you have anything to add to that?
Nothing. That was a really good report. Thanks, Monica.
Thank you for sharing those resources. There's definitely new territories for a lot of individuals with disabilities. Okay, listen. Let's take a song break. I have a song for you called Like Water, Like Earth by Krista Couture. Have a listen. CITR 101.9 FM. That song you just listened to was called Like Water, Like Earth by another Canadian. She is Krista Couture, and I will quote, she is a proudly Indigenous, mixed Cree and Seminesian, queer, disabled, and a mom. Krista has had a journey and a story to tell. she has had childhood cancer that has left her a leg amputee, but despite the losses, she continues to gain and grow. Crystal Sings writes and speaks about her life as an amputee and as a mother who previously lost two little infant boys. However, she recently gained the attention of many parents, fashion designers, and folks with disabilities when she shared her maternity photo and her prosthetic leg. I couldn't find any disability maternity photo, so I made my own. I hope that the next person to do an image search for disability and pregnancy finds these photos and feels empowered by them. I hope they know your difference is powerful and beautiful. And being a parent, you can do it. Go get glory with your present self, whatever body you're in. Comment from Krista. So I just really love that comment, glory in whatever body you're in. You can find her photo and her story on our Facebook page. Krista grew up in Vancouver. She's now a resident in Toronto, where she also broadcasts. All right, so Jesse and I have something else to share with you. What do we know about our current disability rights in Canada? Some of you may know that the recent Accessibility Canada Act passed in 2019, but this act is still new and needs some ironing out on exactly how we're going to put it into action for all of our Canadians across the nation. But let's take a step back and just look at how many years it took for civil rights to be a law for a disability right. As some of you might be wondering, how is Canada always strong and free? Is Canada strong and free? No, not all the time. What do we know about our current disability rights in Canada? Some of you may know about the recent Accessibility Canada Act passed in 2019, yet this act is fairly new and needs some ironing out on exactly how it will put certain aspects into action for fellow Canadians across the nation. But when we take a step back and look at how many years it took for civil rights to be law, some of you may wonder, how did our disability rights come to be here in Canada? Was Canada always this strong and free? Sadly, no.
So Canada is a relatively young country. It's only 153 years old. It was born, so to speak, in 1867. Back then, the view on people with disabilities was that if you had a disability, you were segregated and you were looked on as less than, and you didn't hold the value in society. And we realized that the term back then that they used was actually idiot, which is not the best term to use, but that's what they did back in the Victorian era.
Yeah.
So how did we come to where we are today?
Let's talk about how we progress to get those rights, a brief history on how disability rights came to be in Canada. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't until the last half of the 20th century the disability rights movement occurred in Canada. It took a lot of social movements at advocating and lobbying at all levels of government. So what sparked it? It began mostly due to the growth of industrialization and medical progress, and then there began a segregation of people with disabilities in Canada. Things like psychiatric hospitals, sterilizing people who had mental illnesses, and a lot of search funds charities to support services for people with disabilities.
And so Canada has several social programs, and I'm going to run through some of those today, but I'm preaching to the choir when I say that not everybody is born with a disability, but some people develop health problems or have accidents throughout their lifetime. According to the Canadian Encyclopedia, Social Security refers to the replacement of lost income due to pregnancy, disability, illness, accident, death of a loved one. Then there's a wide range of programs in Canada. To streamline this report, I will talk about workman's compensation and the role of Sir William Meredith. Then I will briefly outline other legislation that deals with disability and health. And I will wrap up talking about Rosalie Silberman of Bella, who has served as a judge on the Supreme Court of Canada, and I believe he's still there. So Nicole, when do you think Canada got its first social program?
The after the war, because I know in the U.S. there was a lot of veterans who were looking for work.
It was actually in here, Canada, it was 1914 with the Workmen's Compensation Act, and it was developed in Ontario. So the workplace environments in Victorian and Georgian eras did not have good working conditions. Many of the factories were unsafe, and frequently workers were injured and some permanently disabled and others were fatal. The trade unions did their best to provide small payments to injured workers through union fees, but the amounts were very small, very meager. So prior to this act being passed, workers were left with suing the employers, which sometimes was not successful. And they had no income in the meantime to provide for their families. There was no welfare, no employment insurance at this time. So the options for families were to rely on charity, that everyone in the family got a job to help support each other, or worse, being sent to workhouses. And I'll show you the details of what workhouses were like back in those days. And so with the Workmen's Compensation Act passed, injured workers were given a steady cash payment, and the bosses were happy. Nobody could sue them anymore, and soon after, other provinces followed suit. So I got the following information from Workers' Safety and Compensation Commission website about Sir William Meredith. He was a lawyer turned politician, and he helped to pass legislation. In the law, he outlined some principles known as the Meredith Principles. And basically, the employers fund the system and share liability with injured workers. In return, workers get an income while they recover, and they agree not to sue the employer. And the Meredith Principles are based on the following. One, no-fault compensation, where workers are paid regardless of how the injury happened, and there's no quibbling over who's at fault. Two, security of benefits. A fund is established to guarantee that workers can be paid. Three, collective liability. All employers contribute to the fund. Four, independent administration. The organizations that administer workmen's compensation are separate from the government. And five, exclusive jurisdiction. Only workers' compensation organizations can provide workers' compensation insurance. The board is the decision maker and the final authority for all claims. So according to a research paper from Osgoode Hall at York University that was written by Terence C. Eisen in 1996, Sir William Meredith produced creative legislation unique to Canada. Prior to that time, our legislation came mostly from England, except for Quebec that got some of its laws from France. It should be mentioned there were problems with the claims process being very slow in the beginning. So claims are apparently processed much more quickly now. Not everybody gets compensated still. It depends upon the board's decision and the rationale behind their decision.
When was the Meredith Principle in the Workmen's Compensation Act?
It was in 1914 in Ontario. It started in Ontario. Then soon after that, other provinces started adopting the same legislation.
And the system was perfect?
No, it was not. It was still slow, very slow in the beginning. And then it's up to the board of what decision they make as to who gets compensated and who doesn't. And I'm sure it was like that back in the beginning as well.
So that was 1914, but things started to shift after the First World War. There was a return of thousands of war veterans that returned to Canada looking for work, but also needed rehab from things like shell shock trauma, and vocational training for people who were dependent on families that had disabilities that needed the charitable support. So some might know of nonprofit organizations such as the War Ants, who began during this time as well. But bear in mind, We're talking about just war vets here. The focus was still only on ex-service persons.
Yes. And so after World War One, in 1937, we had the pensions for the blind coming in that was voted into legislation. Applicants had to prove they needed assistance.
So wait, they were blind, and they needed to prove they needed assistance. Okay, what?
Yes, I know. So a lot of these attitudes of proving you needed assistance have roots in a medieval law done by the Tudor Poor Laws that were originally done by King Henry VIII in England. And the idea is that people had to prove they were deserving poor. So if you had a disability, you had to prove that you have that disability. And if you were a senior, you had to prove you couldn't work anymore. And so the undeserving poor were people who usually had addiction. So, and addiction problems because they were just, back in the day, they were just thought of as syphilis. And we know nowadays that's not true, that it's an actual mental illness. And so we still have this attitude of the poor laws, and so that's why a lot of the pensions and the disability funding and stuff is below minimum wage. Yeah, because they're not supposed to be making more than people who are working, and this whole attitude that we just don't even know where it started. Well, now we do. That poor law back then.
The undeserving poor. Wow.
I know.
Yeah. So after the Second World War, you would think there would be more war veterans, but there actually also was a growing community of people who saw an opportunity to expand social support and occupational services to people with disabilities that were not just war vets. Activists at this time argued that people with disabilities should have an equal right to participate in mainstream society and have equal access to services that help them live and work in a community alongside everyone else. This is when we began to see a surge in technology such as wheelchairs that enabled more independent travel and social movement, such as deinstitutionalization, and that is removing people from resident institutions and replacing those institutions with community-based services. And one of those organizations, it's a nonprofit, is called the Canadian Association of Community Living, which was formerly called the Canadian Association for Retarded Children. This was about 70 years ago. We had a while to go, but now we are the Canadian Association of Community Living.
Much better.
Much better.
Yeah, exactly. Also in that time period, 1945, Canada had hospital insurance that was legislated in Saskatchewan. And the other provinces said, oh my goodness, what a great idea, let's do this. So by 1957, the federal government agreed to share the cost of provincial hospital insurance, and that eliminated the need for charity wards. So this led to the 1966 Medical Care Act, where the federal government agreed to contribute to provincial medical care insurance plans, provided the plans have equal coverage for a wide range of health services and that it was available to everybody regardless of age, condition, or ability to pay. And Nicole, I'm wondering, do you know who the first Jewish woman was to be appointed to the Supreme Court of Canada?
I really don't.
Okay, it was Rosalie Silberman Abella, and I got this information about her from the Supreme Court of Canada website. So she was born in a displaced persons camp in Stuttgart, Germany in 1946. Her family came to Canada as refugees in 1950. She is the first refugee appointed to the Supreme Court in Canada as well. She has accomplished so many things during her distinguished career. She is a tireless champion of human rights and social justice. She has extended legal protections to women, refugees, and same-sex couples. In 1983, she was the chair and author of the Ontario Study on Access and Legal Services by the Disabled. She had an interview with the former dean of University of Toronto Faculty of Law that one of her most controversial projects was chairing the Royal Commission on Equality and Employment in 1984. And so instead of adopting the U.S. approach that treated everyone the same, she recommended acknowledging and accommodating differences so people could be treated as equals. Employment equity legislation adopted her approach so that women, Indigenous people, people with disabilities, and members of visible minorities would be treated more fairly in the workplace. She believes that laws and constitutions are a living tree and should then, so to speak, to consider changing social realities. She created the term employment equity. Her theories of equality and discrimination were adopted by the Supreme Court of Canada in its first decision regarding equality rights under the Charter of Rights and Freedoms in 1989. Rosalie Silberman Abella has helped shape Canada into a more equitable country.
Wow. So Rosalie. Rosalie is still alive today.
Yes, she is.
She's still around. She's still practicing.
She is.
She is, yeah. We have a real rock star activist here. And you can keep Canada strong and free. Well, there you have it. We don't have a lot of time to cover everything that happened in Canada with regards to disability rights. So that was a quick and also surprising peek on just a snippet of the history of how disability rights came to be in Canada. We're still working on making rights a lot more accessible, especially through COVID times, with all especially a brand new Accessibility Act. But what about the Northwest Territories? Clearly working in this area can involve high-risk activities that can result in disability and death. Surely they should be part of the Accessibility Act, but Canada is weird with its territories and provinces. So what about the Northwest Territories who are also fighting climate change? What about food scarcity? What about access to healthcare? How does that impact someone, especially when you have a disability?
Good point.
And sadly, that wraps up our session for today. I'm Nicole, and I hope you enjoyed today. That was my first ever hosting on the All Access Pass. I hope you come back for more. I hope you enjoyed today's show. Thank you all for joining us. So you were listening from all over the Lower Mainland via online broadcasting on our unceded territory of the Musqueam, Sioux, Wasatch, Sioux South, and Squamish Nations of the Coast Salish people.
So, if you are interested in joining our team or think that there's an issue you should bring up on our show, please send us an email at accessibilitycollective@cicr.ca.
Again, special thanks to Alex for joining us with today to share so much about her journey with CICR and the All Access Pass.
And please like our All Access Pass Facebook page.
If you're on Twitter or Instagram or both, please follow us at access_CICR.
And if you missed part of our live show today and want to listen again, or maybe you want to listen to our past shows, you can do so on CICR.ca by going on the search box and typing in All Access Pass.
Thank you for listening. Stick around for more CICR programming coming up next. Bye, everyone.
Bye. Take care.